Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Stocks are doing a little better 1 year later.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. It's the Morning Open. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Financial regulatory reform needs a little compromise. And the Greek Prime Minister, Mr. Papandreou, goes to Washington. All that ahead. First, where's Wall Street? Markets are mixed right now. The S&P off just a little bit. The NASDAQ pretty much flat. Same for the Dow, up about 6.5 points at 10,559. European shares just a little lower right now, and not much movement today in Asia. And the Dow is around, well, we're at 10,559, so around 4,000 points higher than it was this time last year. On this date, it closed at the lowest level of the financial crisis at just above 6,500. So let's take a trip down memory lane. Or more of a nightmare, for that matter, for a lot of people. And Julie Nieman, analyst at Smith Moore & Company, is with us live from St. Louis this morning. Hi, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So did you think a stock market rebound could ever take hold?
Steve, I missed the obvious. I was focusing on the economy. But when you have 0% interest rates and no place to put your money, namely in the bond market, where do you go? You go to stocks. And so we've had a 68% rise fueled on tremendous liquidity going into stocks.
So you were a little bearish on this.
And wrong.
And there she admits it to so many people across the country. The market, Julie, is doing much better. Why isn't the economy matching?
Because bottom line is, we have to take a look at who leads you out of a recession. It's small and medium-sized businesses. Bank credit's been frozen, so you've got a little micro-lending going on that used to be a great source of jobs coming out of a recession. But we're not seeing any kind of job creation and job growth. In fact, we're still losing jobs at this point. So the economy is still in the ditch.
It's still in the ditch, but we're seeing oil prices on the rise. And I'm curious, Julie, does oil trading connect to this sort of type of economic recovery we have? Connect those two things for me, oil to an economic recovery.
Well, one thing, it's an investment vehicle because oil is denominated in dollars. So when the dollar goes up, the price goes down. But you also have a cyclical price going on here, too. It always goes down between December and February. It's up 18% since February. Can it go higher? Sure. There's anticipation that maybe the economy is really going to show some strong growth. And, of course, throw in the usual Middle East tensions. It's not real demand, though, that's going on right now. And we're going to see that with inventories. So if we get job creation, growth in the developed countries, not just the emerging markets, then you're going to see oil go up and stay up. But that's not in the cards. It can go to 60 just as easily as it can go to 100.
Julie Nieman with us from St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
The Senate continues debate over financial regulatory reform, and now we're getting a clearer picture of how the Federal Reserve would play into proposed legislation on things such as overseeing the banks and watching out for consumers. The House passed its own version of financial reform late last year, and anything that comes out of the Senate will have to be reconciled with that bill. Representative Barney Frank is chairman of the House Financial Services Committee. He's with us now from Washington. Congressman, good morning.
Good morning.
We've been hearing about the debate over giving the Fed more authority over these large banks, the really big ones. Is that appropriate, given the Fed's role in parts of the crisis itself?
Well, if you were going to say that no one should have authority over the financial system who hasn't done it well, we would have no authority over anybody. I do think that the Federal Reserve makes the most sense to continue to do the big banks, but it wouldn't be new power. The new power would go to a council of financial regulators, all of the regulators, who will be charged in both bills to see that nothing gets out of whack. What the Senate had been proposing to some extent, which seemed to be very much a mistake, was to enhance the Fed's powers in consumer areas. The Federal Reserve, over the years, was given the major power to be the consumer regulator. It's done that job worse than anything else it's done. And in the House, we pushed for an independent consumer regulator. There's been talk in the Senate of subordinating that.
Yeah, I mean, how do you reconcile, Congressman, if the Senate version doesn't include the consumer financial protection?
Well, we've been doing that for 200 years in America, and I have a proposal here. We used to have, and I'm going to insist on it again, people who want to open this, a House-Senate conference. The House has passed, I think, a pretty good bill. The Senate, I know Senator Dodd has similar views, but he may have to concede too much to the Republicans in weakening it. I am going to insist on a House-Senate conference. We will sit there. I assume C-SPAN will be there, and we will negotiate this out. We can't get everything we want, but we're not going to submit to any substantial weakening of the independence of a consumer agency.
All right. Congressman Barney Frank joining us from Washington. Congressman, thank you for being with us.
You're welcome.
Listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, March 9th, 2010, at marketplace.org. Toyota says it's assigned a technical specialist to investigate the company's latest incident. A California police officer slowed a runaway Toyota Prius that had reached 94 miles an hour on a freeway in eastern San Diego County. The timing couldn't have been worse for Toyota. Yesterday, the company held a news conference to rebut an ABC News story that allegedly shows how miswiring can cause unintended acceleration. Marketplace's Elisa Roth is with us live from our studio in New York with the latest. Good morning, Elisa.
Good morning.
So Toyota keeps saying that it's solved the problems, but if the Highway Patrol is having to rescue a Prius driver off the freeway, is that really true?
You know, not to defend Toyota here, but regardless of what's happened until now, there's no doubt that at this point, Toyota is trying its best to resolve these problems. It's also worth reiterating here that when you consider the number of reported incidents and the number of deaths attributed to them, unintended acceleration is still a pretty rare occurrence.
Okay, but tell us a little bit about this ABC News report and what Toyota is saying about it.
Well, late last month, ABC interviewed a university professor who said he'd figured out a way to change the wiring on a Toyota to make it accelerate really fast.
Just like that, huh?
Now, here's some tape from the report. That's Brian Ross, the reporter for ABC, who's driving the car.
The brakes don't work. The brakes give out. Gee.
Now, technically speaking, it was that there was too much acceleration, not that the brakes didn't work. But in any case, this professor says his experiment shows Toyota's acceleration problems could be caused by electronics. And yesterday, Toyota held this press conference to refute those claims. Here's an engineering expert Toyota brought out to support its response to the ABC News story.
It requires cutting of the insulation on the wires to access the conductors. It requires yet another short circuit. And then, above and beyond all that, they all have to happen in a specific sequence.
And Toyota also said that you could manipulate any car from any maker to do this.
Marketplace's Elisa Roth, who covers the car industry for us, reporting from New York. Elisa, thanks.
You're welcome.
America was able to export fast food to Europe. Now, for those Europeans who scarf down just a wee bit too many Le Big Macs, there's a popular American diet program launching today. Marketplace's Caitlin Carroll reports.
Thinking about losing weight? Well, Jenny Craig has big news.
The big news is that Jenny Craig's opening more than a dozen weight loss centers in France. Over the last few years, France, like many European countries, has seen an increase in obesity. Will Clower wrote the book, The French Don't Diet. He says France's younger generation is heading to fast food restaurants instead of eating small meals at home.
The young people are the ones who are more likely to go to McDonald's. They're the ones that are more likely to embrace others' behaviors rather than their traditional behaviors.
Tom Wadden is director of the Center for Weight and Eating Disorders at the University of Pennsylvania. He says even though France's weight problem is small compared to other European countries, he agrees with Jenny Craig's strategy to start there first.
Where can you find people who are more self-conscious about their appearance and their image than the French? So I think it's a very well-reasoned move on Jenny Craig's part to be going to France.
Wadden says Jenny Craig's small portion sizes will likely make sense to French consumers, but the costs may put them off. Meals can run $100 a week. And when I get to the tough question, what about the wine?
That could be a deal breaker for the French.
Brits, hold on to your lagers. Jenny Craig is coming to the UK later this year. I'm Caitlin Carroll for Marketplace.
1 in 8 people in America uses food stamps, more than ever before. Yet if you live in Colorado, there's a good chance your paperwork isn't getting processed in 30 days, as the federal law requires. And when that happens, those who rely on food assistance have to deal with a gap in benefits. From Denver, Colorado Public Radio's Zachary Barr has more.
Robert Rothfuss is disabled, and he's been on government food stamps for 30 years.
They've always been, you know, real punctual, and they've been real good, you know, to be with.
Until the past few years. You see, if you receive food stamps, you have to reapply periodically to prove you're still eligible. And a couple of times recently, Robert's been incorrectly cut off. Last month, he went to a local 7-Eleven, grabbed a bag of chips, and swiped his card.
I thought, you know, that I'd buy, you know, a small amount and then see if my stamps had shown up, and they didn't.
Rothfuss did everything right, says Dorothy Hervey at Colorado Legal Services.
In Robert's case, it appears that the information was never put into the computer system.
Rothfuss had even gone so far as to hand deliver his paperwork 3 weeks early.
Clients are returning those documents timely, and they're falling into a black hole, and they disappear, and the county departments are saying, we've never gotten them.
Whether the counties aren't getting the applications, or whether they're sitting in a pile somewhere, the outcome's the same. You lose your benefits. To get them back, you have to appeal. And around 15,000 people go through this every month in Colorado.
It's about how do we get these applications processed more effectively.
William Browning's in charge of the state computer system that determines eligibility for benefits, and many blame that computer system for these delays. And Browning admits that used to be true, but no longer. He says personnel's now the issue. He says there aren't enough caseworkers, and the ones who are working need to do so more efficiently. And he says the state is overwhelmed.
We're processing 34% more caseload than we were a year ago at this time, and yet we're performing 10% better than we were a year ago.
But the state agreed to process every application on time after settling a lawsuit 3 years ago. Its failure to comply means it could wind up back in court as early as next month. As for Robert Rothfuss, he's now back on food stamps after going 25 days without them. In Denver, I'm Zachary Barr for Marketplace.
Greece needs a lot of money to make payments on its debts, about $25 billion, maybe more. And the Prime Minister, George Papandreou, has already toured the capitals of Europe seeking help, Berlin, Paris. Today he's in Washington to see what President Obama might be willing to do to help. Here's Marketplace's John Dimsdale.
If Greece can't meet its debt obligations, investors would begin to wonder whether any country with red ink, including the U.S., is safe. That's why the U.S. has a stake in the early resolution of Greece's debt crisis. But Rob Duggar, the managing partner of Hanover Investment Group, says as a full member of the European Single Currency Zone, Greece has no business asking for U.S. help.
It would be very much like if Arnold Schwarzenegger went to Europe and asked, please help California. The Europeans would say, Governor Schwarzenegger, we have every sympathy for you, but we're helping work on Greece. You need to get the United States to help you work on your problems.
If he can't get help, Papandreou could turn to the International Monetary Fund for a loan, an embarrassing admission of failure for a Eurozone member. But a stop at IMF headquarters is not on the Prime Minister's agenda. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
And finally, a woman in New Zealand did an exorcism in her home. She says she caught a couple of ghosts in a couple of glass vials. Those containers of ghosts sold for about $2,000 in an online auction. Avi Woodbury says she captured the spirits and an old man and a little girl while performing a seance and pulling out the Ouija board. As far as the money goes, she says she wants to donate proceeds to the sale, the proceeds of the sale, to the Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, but only after she pays for the exorcist. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.